Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. Ken Edwards with the NCL, Ed Maher with the NCL. Good morning, Ed.
What's happening, Ken?
All good. All good. Phil Davidson, Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Good morning,
good
Phil.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Guys had good Thanksgivings?
For sure.
Did. Yeah? Did you eat a lot?
I did. Packed down a few pounds.
I made chicken.
You made chicken?
Yeah.
You got to bulk up for the winter.
Why would you do that?
I just don't care about turkey.
Huh.
You know, I want to spare a turkey.
You're just a contrarian.
So, all right, let's do this. You ready? Quick. What are you thankful for?
I am thankful for my union.
Like it.
My family.
Like it.
And my country.
Oh, wow. Well, good for you. You?
I'm going family. I'm going to go union now because Phil said it. And then also I'm thankful that in the past year we have become the number one show on the radio on Sundays.
Woo-hoo!
Breakfast with the Beatles. Never heard of them.
Who?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You had your time, Beatles.
Yeah.
It's workers' mic time now.
Yeah, they're not even an American band.
So, Ken, what are you thankful
for? Well, I'm glad you asked. I have a lot of things to be thankful for, so I have a whole little litany here.
All right.
And I actually prepared some remarks, which I don't normally prepare.
You wrote a speech.
Buckle up, listeners.
I don't prepare anything. But I'm thankful for this administration canceling union rights for over 1 million people. With the swipe of an auto pen. I'm thankful the administration has gutted the Clean Energy Act, killing hundreds of thousands of good middle-class union jobs. I'm thankful that the administration has decided that climate change is a woke hoax, so we don't need this planet. I'm thankful that the DOJ has been weaponized. I'm thankful that the NLRB has been rendered useless and will probably be declared unconstitutional. I'm thankful that immigrants have become the enemy. I'm thankful that layoffs are at the highest level since the Great Recession. I'm thankful that corporations are squeezing out every last dime of us, making us choose between food and rent. And I'm thankful that tariffs have blown up in our face. And finally, I'm thankful that the ruling class, the technocrats, and the billionaires have hijacked our elections with their money. Now, why am I thankful for all this? I'm not really thankful.
Because you're a pessimist?
Yes. Because I'm a glass half empty.
Really killed the vibe.
You're an oligarch?
No, I'm making a point, and here's why I'm thankful. Because I think that America is actually, given everything I just read, and that is the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. I didn't even mention Project 2025.
Yep.
That America's finally waking up to the reality that our democracy is fragile and has always been fragile. It's fragile. And it works only when we work together. We don't have to agree on everything, but it works when we work together. I'm actually thankful that a few weeks ago, there were almost 10 million people marching in the No Kings rallies throughout every state in the country. That was the biggest march since Earth Day's first day 50 years ago.
Wow.
I'm thankful that farmers are starting to realize that there's no way to pick fruit. You know, processed meat, that the myth of these job stealing immigrants was just that. It's a myth.
Right.
Right. Because we're starting to see that. I'm thankful that labor unions are having a resurgence. Right. And, you know, we joke about Starbucks, but look, you got a bunch of people serving coffee taking on Evil Corp.
Yeah.
Right. And warehouse workers standing up to Amazon, you know, and stalwart union busters and, you know, just standing up. And finally, that we're realizing that the enemy isn't each other. But that it's those that would believe, that would have us believe that it's each other, right? And I think that people are starting to realize you've got to get the money out of politics. I'm thankful to see a couple of Republicans, right? We talk about Josh Hawley all the time, but a few more are starting to stand up with the working class. So my point being is that I think this, what has been going on, look, the good times don't last forever, but neither do the bad times.
Sure.
Right? And so I am hopeful.
Edwards 2028. Got my vote, man.
Thank you so much.
Going for the angry voter.
Can I be your VP?
Because I really am. That I think that this needed to happen in this country. We needed to get down to it. It was bubbling under the surface for such a long time. All this hate and this animosity, and you know, us against them, and us against each other, and immigrants stealing jobs, and blah blah, like all this stuff. I think people are realizing that this is not the country that we want. You know what I mean?
It should be us versus the robots.
The robots.
I want that to happen.
Or honestly. Us versus the billionaires.
That's the one thing
right?
bring us together. Yeah.
So anyway, that's what I'm thankful for.
That was a long one.
It was a long one. Yes. We have a live audience here today.
You got an applause button?
I certainly did. Just for my own speech.
Well, it's the one way that Ken's ever going to get some applause.
With that diatribe, and I appreciate everybody taking the time to listen.
But there was hope at the end of your diatribe.
That's the whole point of this, right? I really do think that things are going to turn around in this country. I think that the midterms, I think that the recent elections showed us that. I think the midterms are going to be game-changing, and I think that things are going to get better. I think jobs are going to come back, and so I am hopeful. And with that, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk about some news, and then we actually had a pre-recorded segment with Treasurer Furex.
Yeah, last time he was in the
right?
studio.
So we're going to
great
gonna
friend play. Of labor.
Yeah, he was such a good dude,
standing tall.
So because he's tall, he's the tallest treasurer.
He is.
So we're gonna play that, and then we'll wrap it up with a surprise guest here at the end. Ooh. How you like that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, yeah. All right, listen, we'll be right back with more of The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. Thanksgiving weekend edition of The Workers' Mic, right?
Yes.
So, we got some kind of cool stories.
Sure.
Right? It's like, let's not all be all doom and gloom. I got to tell you, I think one of the coolest stories I read last week was Operation Ice Scraper.
That was pretty funny.
Right?
Yeah.
So check it out. It was this. And I think it was Home Depot was the target?
Right.
Where was it? Do you know?
I don't know where. I saw a bunch of different videos, so they did it in different places.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
locations?
Yeah. So, you know, like if you go to Home Depot, right, there are always people standing there in the parking lot waiting to get picked up for day labor.
Yes.
Right. And by the way, that's a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, it's unscrupulous contractors. They're paying cash.
Yeah. The workers are desperate and they're likely to be exploited.
They're definitely getting exploited. Like, you know, be shocked if they're getting paid minimum wage, if that. There's no safety. It's a recipe for disaster.
There's no taxes being paid.
There's no, screwed. It's what we fight against, right?
Everyone loses.
And, you know,
except the person getting cheap.
Well, then you get these pickup trucks and they're like, hey, come on, get in the back of the pickup truck and I'm going to go, you know, hang drywall with no mask and, you know, paint or whatever it is.
I'll pay you $100 for the day.
Yeah.
And they just, they take it or leave it not knowing what they're in for.
It's really, really bad. But what Home Depot does, which shocks me, is they let them hang out in their parking lot, right? You see them all over the place.
Yeah.
Which I always find there has to be some sort of, you know, calculation in this regard that a contractor, quote unquote, right, will come to Home Depot, buy blank materials in his pickup or whatever, and on the way out of the parking lot go, okay, I need three guys.
Yeah.
So they must think that having those people in the parking lot is somehow going to benefit Home Depot. Does that make sense to you all?
Yeah.
This is just my hypothesis. I have no idea.
Yeah, people buy the equipment. People buy the labor. Yeah. If the labor was not there and was at a different chain, people
would they go
maybe
to,
were
right?
more likely to go there. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, makes sense.
Maybe Lowe's is like, we're going to have cheaper day laborers. Than Ace Lowers, Hardware would be like, Lowers. So anyway, there was a protest, and it was about... Home Depot allowing ICE agents either into the stores, the parking lots. I'm not even sure why. But what I liked about it was this. It was Operation Ice Scraper. So hundreds of people went into Home Depot. They bought a $19 ice scraper. And then they immediately got off a line and then they went to return it. And it just jacked up Home Depot to the point where one of the stores like closed. right? And so yeah,
they had hundreds of people in line to return these, like, I think it was 17 cents.
Was it 17? I love scrapers.
That's pretty good.
And yeah. You know what I learned from this entire story?
What?
That you can get an ice scraper for 17 cents.
No, seriously.
Who knew?
I bet it's not a very good one.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So anyway, the point being is that, you know, forget immigration, forget anything to do with ICE, et cetera, et cetera. The fact that there was a concerted action, right, just made me happy. Like, people are just taking it upon themselves to do something like this. And you shut off a store, like a Home Depot, for a day or several hours, you hurt them economically.
Yeah.
And it's finally like what Starbucks baristas, by picketing the fulfillment center or whatever,
right,
it is, the, you know,
distribution
center, and the team's just coming out and saying, we're not crossing the picket line, we're not delivering food, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
You know, it's like that kind of stuff, that's what works.
Yeah.
And I think we in the builder trades know this intuitively, if that makes sense to you all.
Yeah.
But
And you bring up a good point of how it's unacceptable that Home Depot allows that, because it's become, I mean, just common knowledge and in a joke of, oh, you need to find day labor, go to Home Depot parking lot, you know?
And yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
we all kind of chuckle at it, but no, it's not right. It's never been right. These are people being exploited.
And the ice scraper thing had nothing to do with the fact that the Home Depot was allowing those people there.
Right.
It had to do with, like, ice coming into Home Depot.
There's something for everyone to hate at Home Depot, whether you hate the immigrants that are sitting there trying to get work or you hate the fact that ice is present.
No, I love Project Ice Scraper. That's a very clever ruse.
I thought that was clever. As well.
But the whole practice just stinks.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I thought that was fun. Anyway, there was also a strike that was settled recently, Pittsburgh News Gazette. They were on strike for 3 years,
mm-hmm,
I think, something like that.
Yeah.
This is Pittsburgh, right? Newspaper Guild, which is my home union before Local 150, where I cut my teeth, the Chicago Newspaper Guild. And they were on strike for a long time. And this is what, enough to drive you crazy. 3 years later, a judge found, or actually I think it was three judges, I think it went to an appellate court, found that the paper negotiated in bad faith. And, you know, made proposals that were never going to happen, unilaterally increased their cost of health insurance, et cetera. So they went on strike, and there are going to be monetary damages. And so the Newspaper Guild went back in. But one thing I thought was weird is they said when they went back in, they wanted to make sure that the people that were hired while they were on strike remained. And that was reported. That
It would be weird for the union to be pushing for that.
Yeah, I don't get that.
I don't get that at all.
Yeah, same. So we have to dig a little deeper on that. And then you talked about...
Was it the previous employees just working without a contract that they went?
No, they were on strike.
Okay.
So I don't know what it meant. Maybe it was a typo, you know? Maybe they said... I'm not sure.
Interesting.
It doesn't make any sense.
Mm-mm. You know, but it was like the Boeing thing, right? Where they go back in and it's like, hey, listen, they got to go.
Yeah.
You know, and then that was a condition of settling that strike. And by the way, speaking of which, the guy, the lawyer from Boeing, the guy that initially got shot down from getting on the National Labor Relations Board by Josh Hawley because Boeing was on strike, now that the strike's over, Mr. Hawley has said that he's like, oh, I'm okay with him now. So,
pulled his objection.
Yes. Yeah, so that guy's going to be
his blue slip.
That guy is going to be assigned to the National Labor Relations Board shortly here. And what did you talk about on Worker Wednesday? You said something about
National Parks.
Yeah. What's going on there?
So this week, within the past week, two groups of National Park employees have come together to say that they want a union, to call for a union election. So one of them was sort of the Central District, which is, let me think, there was the Grand Canyon,
mm-hmm,
Grand Teton, you know, a couple other that are sort of not West Coast, but close. I think there were three parks. And then further west, there was, I think it was Olympic and
Yosemite.
So these are a couple of groups that have said that they want protection. And last year, there were three others. They came forward. So what we're talking about
is
a union.
Are none of the parks employees unionized?
So really, about half of the entire staff of the National Park Service is already unionized. And in this move, there would be about another 10%. Now, if you want another statistic to make your head spin, since the beginning of the Trump administration, that the staff of the NPS has been reduced by almost a quarter.
Oof.
Through layoffs, through furloughs, through people voluntarily leaving.
Shocking.
Yeah, but I think the story here is...
Are they all with AFGE?
No, some are with I forget the acronym. It's AFFE. And then some of these that just happened this week are going to be with the Treasury Employees Association, of all things. But there are a couple things happening here. John Hansen on Worker Wednesday this week asked, is this something that, you know, happens in the private sector also when, you know, when people feel the heat, feel like their job is being threatened? And the answer, of course, is yes.
Yeah. That look at the Chicago Tribune.
Right.
They were never union until they got sold and they started chopping the staff and all of a sudden, like, hey, we should probably be
private
union.
Equity right. took over.
Yeah.
So you start to think like, oh man, I'm about to be fired for nothing, or I'm about to be laid off, or these owners are about to, you know, take an axe to, you know, all the staff here. We've got to do something. And they're not wrong. But I think the moral of the story here is do something before all of that happens. Get yourself some protection ahead of time, because you know, getting a union at that last moment, it's like a foxhole prayer.
Yeah,
it certainly is. It's like buying car insurance after the accident.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? Like, you need to have, we used to call, you know, sometimes we would go out and we would have a bargaining unit that had no grievances for 5 years.
Yeah. Right?
Everything is hunky-dory. People are making money. Things are going smooth. And every once in a while, somebody goes, why are we paying union dues? And everybody else will be like, shut up. It's called job insurance.
Yeah.
Right? And that's exactly what
things are going well.
Yeah. And it's also, look, if things are going well, and it hasn't been a fire for 2 weeks, you don't disband the fire department.
Yeah. Like, right? There's no crime. Let's get rid of all the cops.
Yeah. So it's a good point, Ed, and that I think, like you said earlier, the best, defense to a union organizing drive is to, A, never get there because you treat your employees well.
Right.
Right? We've always said, if you're an employer and you treat them well, you pay them well, you have great benefits,
Costco.
And you treat them with respect, right?
Yeah.
Costco's a great example. And there are unions in Costco, right? Yeah. Some drivers, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, treat people right, and, you know, then maybe you can avoid unionization. I still think that having a union is going to end up, you know, benefiting you regardless.
Yeah.
Pensions, health insurance, you know, safety, training, apprentices, like all the stuff that unions offer. But, you know, don't wait till the axe has already fallen and then go like, oh, we're going to join a union.
Well, I remember there was 10 years ago, maybe, there was an employee from a company from another state who came into Local 150 and said he was interested in organizing. We looked at what their health insurance, what their retirement benefits, all this kind of stuff were. And the health insurance was better than what the union negotiated. We had great insurance. So we said, like, these
probably
things
wasn't one of my contracts.
No, definitely not.
No, but I mean, it's like, you know, if this worker was to try to go back and round up, you know, a bunch of other workers and get them to unionize, it'd be like, well, why? What do we need it for? So if you're a business owner and you're trying to avoid unions, you can do one of two things. You can hire union busters to go fill the workers' heads with nonsense and
pay
scare
them,
tactics.
And just pay a ton of money for them.
For sure. Or you can actually take good care of your workers and, you
Which
know, treat them well.
1% of corporate America who
does
that.
And I think they typically find that if you take really good care of your employees, they work a little bit harder.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah. That
so
is,
that's that. But national but park workers. Who wants to mess with the national park workers?
I don't know. Like, why, what's the matter with them? And why'd they lay 25% of them off?
Yeah.
Why?
You want to find a group of people who do a job for the love of the job.
That is
It's national park workers.
All day, every day, right?
These people are not getting rich.
And they're working outside. But you know what? They love what they do.
Yeah, they keep the parks clean.
We represented at 150, we represented Will County Forest Reserve District. And those people really liked working outside. Like,
yeah.
That was their goal in life. And so when you get paid well to do it, that's a great gig. You know what I mean?
And they'll do it well.
Yeah, I know. So
their hearts are in it.
But you know, but here, let me just say one last thing. You know, fight the union. You know, denigrate those type of employees, and in any way, shape, or form. But you're also simultaneously hurting, you know, the hotels, the entertainment industry around there,
yeah,
right? The people that come and buy stuff, and you know, like tourism and all of those kind of things. It's really, really short sighted.
Totally.
You know what I mean? So, anyway, so we got to take a quick break.
We do. We're going to have an interview with Mike Ferrix, treasurer of the state of Illinois, here in a minute. And then we have a surprise guest coming all the way from Iowa.
Oh, nice.
It's a little hint for some of you folks. Coming all the way from Iowa to help us close out the show.
All right. Way to go. All right. We'll be right back with more of The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Workers' Mic. More show to come. Sponsored by Hinge Health. Hinge Health specializes in personalized digital exercise therapy designed for hardworking people, just like you. It's pain relief without waiting rooms and costly medications. Visit hingehealth.com today. Now, back to the show.
You're listening to The Worker's Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Worker's Mic here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher, here with Ken Edwards and Phil Davidson, and a very special guest. We want to welcome Illinois State Treasurer Mike Frerichs to the studio.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show. You've been on before. Yeah,
big guest
absolutely.
For the show.
Now, you're in to tell us something important today about the Illinois Infrastructure First Fund.
Yeah.
Yeah, what is it?
I've been hearing a lot about this.
Yeah. You maybe haven't heard a lot about it because it didn't exist before I was state treasurer. And maybe you haven't called the state treasurer in before because I like to tell people I have the best, least understood job in state government. Everyone knows the treasurer deals with money, but what do you do with it? I'm the chief investment officer of the state of Illinois. Mm-hmm. We invest the state's money to get a good return because every dollar we can bring in interest income is a dollar that doesn't have to be raised in taxes.
Right.
Or a dollar that doesn't have to be made in cuts to things like our schools, our universities, or roads and bridges.
And how much money are we talking?
So I say our portfolio, it moves over time, but I manage a total portfolio of about $60 billion.
Whoa.
So it's a lot of money out there.
Whoa. That's like Elon Musk's yearly salary.
That's more than, I was going to say, that's more than we make.
A little bit, yeah.
If his board had their way, it would be less than his yearly salary.
True.
I don't know if you saw this, it's something we've taken a stance on here. $1 trillion over 10 years is what they propose.
We talked about that.
Him.
Yeah,
and we can talk about how, as a shareholder, I get some say in that. I get to weigh in.
Well, you have money invested in Tesla through the pensions, I assume, correct?
Through pension funds, retirement funds, college savings funds. Yeah. I'm the fiduciary of those funds. And so we get to vote proxies of those shares.
And there have been lawsuits.
We get to file resolutions.
There have been lawsuits, by the way. And not to veer off topic for a quick second, but I'm sure you're familiar with this, lawsuits against companies like Tesla or their board for basically giving away the store.
Yep.
What are they called? Shareholder derivative suits?
Yeah, shareholder derivative suits. We file shareholder resolutions at the annual meeting where we object. Those boards of directors, those trustees are elected.
Right.
And we have run campaigns voting against trustees. Board members.
Because they're supposed to do what's in the best interest of the investor, correct?
Correct. And it sure seems like the Elon or the Tesla board is doing what's in the best interest of Elon, not Illinois pensioners.
And Elon's doing what's in the best interest of, I'm not exactly sure.
Elon's doing what's in the best interest of Elon, right? I'm pretty sure that's how it works. All right, let's go back to this. The first fund. What is it?
Yeah, so I get to invest in things. And the General Assembly does not like a lot of risk.
Okay.
And so they say I can't invest state funds into the stock market. Now, pension funds, college savings funds can be.
Yep.
But I said, like, look, we can make a good return on treasury notes and some other investment opportunities out there, but we can also make an impact. If you allow me to invest a small portion of our portfolio in infrastructure projects, you know, just 5%, no more than 5% will limit that risk out there. I'll guarantee we'll make money. Looks like we're going to make a much higher interest rate than we would investing in treasury notes. Mm. We will make Illinois more competitive when we improve our roads and our bridges, when we improve our telecommunications, our power generation.
Sure.
We improve our housing. We're going to make our businesses more competitive. And three, we'll put people to work here in Illinois.
Yes.
So we invest in infrastructure.
We like that.
But we invest in Illinois. Based infrastructure.
Got it.
And then any funds we're investing with, we have them sign a pledge that they will invest twice the state dollars into Illinois. So for every $100 million that we invest, $200 million will be spent growing our infrastructure, our roads,
by
our
whom?
Bridges.
By whom?
So our very first investment was with Ulico.
Okay.
So I'm not investing directly into projects.
Right.
We invest in fund managers who invest in infrastructure.
Got it.
And we've invested over half a billion dollars so far.
Yeah.
we're having good returns, and we can see real tangible benefits.
Can you explain to me how an investment in infrastructure pays returns?
So it can pay a variety of different ways. So we invest, there's a problem with cellular access throughout large parts of downstate. We invest in a wireless company that is building out the network out there so that when I travel around this great state, I'm not dropping phone calls all the time.
Right.
And that network makes money. We invest in a logistics park out by Joliet. They need help out there, but that park is going to make money.
Got it.
We invest in things like cable, high-speed internet here in the city of Chicago, connecting Chicago schools. Well, people pay for that access.
Right.
You know, it's not that they – it's like my grandfather who grew up on a dairy farm.
Yeah.
Electricity existed in this country. People were lighting their homes for decades before it came to my grandfather's house.
Right. It just didn't get there yet.
Yeah, it did. The company said, well, it makes financial sense for us to light cities.
Yeah, right.
But someone like my grandfather lived in the countryside, didn't make sense for him. It wasn't until FDR and Democrats basically pushed rural electrification that his life got a lot better. And it's the same thing. There are parts of the city, parts of the state that don't have access to high-speed internet, don't have access to good, reliable cellular technology. And that puts them at a real disadvantage competitively. Whether it be for learning or starting a business somewhere. So we're investing in building out that infrastructure that's going to help people in the state and make money and put people in the same time.
When you say 5%, you mean 5% of the total budget?
5% of the total state portfolio. So the state has taxes, fees come in while they sit, while they're sitting there waiting to be spent, like something like the road fund.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
We money comes in. It grows in that account before it's spent. You know, we have two seasons in Illinois.
Yeah,
construction and winter. Yeah. Well, so while that, you know, gas taxes is still coming into that fund in winter when we're not building.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We invest that money to make more.
Right.
So that when construction season comes, we can build more things.
Yeah, perfect.
And then
for us. And those
creates
who are listening,
good union jobs.
Listen on the workers' mic. That means jobs. J-O-B-S, jobs for us, especially in the building trades, right? Infrastructure, jobs for us, correct?
Exactly.
And that money then stays in the community,
right?
For every dollar that comes into a building trades, you know, whatever, X number of dollars goes back into the community.
Six times.
Right? It's just great for the communities. It's great for the workers. That's important to us.
And we're hoping to increase that multiple because when we invest in infrastructure, we make money, which is more money to be spent, but we also make sure that money is spent here in Illinois on trained, skilled workers.
What happens? What about people that just knock Illinois constantly? Like, oh, we're in so much debt. People are leaving in droves. We're losing bodies to, I don't even know where, whatever they're saying.
Florida.
Florida.
Tennessee.
Yeah. Is there any truth to that?
Well, I can say a few things there. People said that the state of Illinois has problems. Yes, we have problems. But our problems are not nearly as great as they were 7 years ago.
Okay.
You know, if you think back 7-8 years ago, under Governor Bruce Rauner, we had about $16.5 billion in unpaid bills. That was a problem.
Yeah.
Rating agencies were downgrading us multiple times.
Right.
Well, for the last 7-8 years, we have passed balanced budgets. We have paid down that debt.
Mm-hmm.
We are paying down more on our other debt out there. We're not out of the woods, but we've stopped digging the hole, and we've started filling it back in.
That's awesome.
And the ratings have improved, right?
We've had, I think, eight or nine credit upgrades since then.
So we have a rainy day fund.
What does that mean?
It means there's money left over that we can save.
What's our bond rating?
So our bond rating has improved with those credit rating upgrades.
Okay.
But that having the extra money around means that when the next recession comes, when the Trump slump really hits us and we have to make tough choices, we're going to have some money set aside to lessen the impact on people in the state.
What is our bond rating?
There are three different rating agencies who rate us differently. Now, clearly, we have not completely filled in that hole. We haven't dug ourselves out completely, but we're going in the right direction. And if we keep making decisions like this,
how do we compare to other states?
Oh, we are still near the bottom.
Really?
We have definitely moved up.
Because of the pension obligations mostly, right?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
We still have a large unfunded pension obligation.
Jersey's last. We're out of Jersey.
Woohoo!
In every way possible.
Hold on a second. But if you were to move that pension obligation out of the way, would we be completely solvent and, you know, up there in the top 10?
There's some health care obligations as well.
Okay.
We promised health care, so the expenses. But once again, we are going in the right direction. We're not going to solve our problem overnight.
Right.
We can't just walk away from it. The state tried to get out of some of that pension obligation. The Supreme Court said, no, that's illegal.
Yes.
There was a contract you entered into.
Yes.
You can change the terms of the contract, but you can't do it unilaterally.
Right.
So if you want to give the workers a choice here,
yep.
if you want to give them options, they can choose to change their terms, but the state can't do it unilaterally.
Got it. All right. So we're on our way. We're doing better, right? We got a rainy day fund. We got this Illinois First Fund, mm-hmm. right, which was funding infrastructure, which means good jobs for us. It sounds like, you know, you're doing a good job.
Well, you got my vote.
I'm a little biased, but yeah. But yeah, we're doing things differently here. And I can point to numerous things, whether it be interest income. We've set records the last 2 years, brought in over $1.5 billion each of the last 2 years, over $3 billion over the last couple of years. That's far more than we've ever brought in before.
That's awesome. Let me ask you a question.
We've set records on unclaimed property as well, returned nearly $2.5 billion to people in this state.
Holy cow.
We do it by thinking differently, by reimagining government, and by trying to be more efficient about how we do these things.
You should just keep that $2.5 billion. It would just, you know, help the debt.
Well, I would say we've talked about this before. When we put more money into, let's say, your members' pockets, you know your fellow union members.
For sure.
When you give them, you know, another $100 in their pocket, they then go and put it in the bank and start saving, right?
No.
They buy trucks.
No, they go invest it overseas in some. No,
It's in the Cayman Islands.
They spend it on a truck, and that truck is probably more likely an American-made truck.
That's right.
They spend it like, hey, honey, let's go out for dinner, and they go to a local restaurant. Maybe we put $500, $600 in their pocket, and they say, hey, let's go on a vacation.
Yeah.
Do they go to the south of France?
No.
Hey, some of them go to a deer blind.
They go to Marcel's.
In Illinois,
Cairo.
They might go hunting around there. They might go to Wisconsin Dells. The point is, when you put more money into working people's hands, they almost always spend it really quickly, and they almost all spend it here locally. And if we get that money circulating throughout the economy, it does more good for our state than it does if you give let's say you give a large tax break to people who are worth tens, hundreds of millions of dollars.
What does that do?
What did they do with it?
They save it.
Hoard it.
They save it. They save it in an account in the Cayman Islands, they invest it in an overseas company.
Sure.
Maybe they treat themselves to a new car, and it's probably a foreign luxury car.
For sure.
And so the question is, like, that money goes somewhere, but what makes a greater impact?
Yeah. When you're doing this stuff, like the first fund, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you get bipartisan support on things like that?
Yes and no. On this one, we've had some good bipartisan support, but there are some people out there who are just so partisan.
Yeah.
If it's an initiative of my office, they oppose it.
So it's dead before it gets
with,
there.
With some people, yes, but that's okay. We don't stop trying. We reach out and we find areas we can agree upon. But if it's a good idea and someone just has a partisan knee-jerk reaction against it, it's not going to stop us.
Needed the General Assembly's approval for that fund?
The state treasurer, I like to say, I'm the chief investment officer, but I invest with handcuffs.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
I mean, the General Assembly says, we don't want you to take too much risk. We're going to limit what you can do. And so I have to go and ask them permission when we have a new idea for things like our Illinois Growth and Innovation Fund, our Student Empowerment Fund, or our Infrastructure Fund.
Illinois, it's been my opinion for many years that we are sort of a bastion of bipartisanship relative to the rest of the country, where you see some states that are just split down the middle, party line votes on everything. We still have a lot of bipartisan support here in Illinois in our state legislatures. Would you say that's right?
Well, I would say we have a lot of bipartisanship here in Illinois, but those things never get reported on.
Right.
When a bill passes unanimously, that's not news.
Right.
It's news when it passes by one vote or two votes
or
something gets overridden or there's a fight out there.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so when people say, the parties are always just fighting, well, you always just hear about the fights. You don't always hear about the times where there's
you say
general consensus.
Right, because we've tried desperately on this show to talk to union leaders that talk to both sides of the aisle. And, you know, to a union leader that we've talked to thus far, they say we'd be stupid to just give all our money to Dems, put all our eggs in the Dem basket, even if the Dems currently have a supermajority, et cetera, et cetera. You still want Republican buy-in, right? And why? Bunch of reasons, but also because half our members, if not more, lean Republican, right? Vote Republican.
Yeah.
So you have to do it. And it just, you know, the country is so divided right now that you're right. Like, you don't hear about, you know, a great bill being passed. You know, look, the last one you heard about, to be blunt with you, on the federal level was the bipartisan infrastructure bill, right? And that was a fantastic thing. And they called it bipartisan infrastructure bill on purpose
to
get that message out there that this can be done, it should be done. Of course, now, you know, it's getting clawed back. And, you know, no more green energy and blah, 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 you know. So, I don't know. That's sad. Let me ask a question. Where'd you go to school?
Rantoul Township High School or Yale University?
Well, you tell me. It was
Those are the two places I went to school. And Gifford Grade School as well.
Oh, that's a good school.
Everybody knows Gifford.
I heard of Gifford.
Yeah, we had a
what was the other one? Yale?
Yale University.
Gifford had a graduating class. My class, about 24 kids, and that was a big class.
Yeah.
It was normally around 18 to 20 per class.
Yeah. So what was your degree?
I ended up studying German at Yale. Not your typical path to becoming state treasurer.
That wasn't the answer I was looking for.
My grandmother, who did not attend college or high school, dropped out after seventh grade, she told me, was really disappointed when I told her I got into Yale. Her response was, you couldn't get into good Lutheran schools like Wartburg or Luther or Augustana.
Wow.
I was like, Grandma, Yale is a pretty good school. Yeah. And so she hadn't heard of it. Now, my grandmother, German was her first language.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in German, you pronounce a J like a Y.
Mm-hmm.
When you say Ja, it's J-A.
Yeah.
So my grandmother, when she learned English, transposed them.
So this was jail.
She would pronounce Y's like J's. And so she would tell her friends, my grandson, he's going to jail. And my mom had to tell her mother, Mom, when you tell people that Mike is going to college, what they hear is that he is going to prison. And for the rest of her life, my grandmother would not attempt to say the word Yale. If you asked where I went to college, she'd say, he goes to school in Connecticut. Connecticut, she could pronounce.
All right, listen, we got to go. But Mike Frericks, right? Illinois State Treasurer, thank you so much for all the hard work that you do on behalf of the working people in the state of Illinois. We really appreciate it.
Ken, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Ed, Phil, it's a pleasure.
Yeah. Pleasure. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
We'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mike right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mike, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mike right here at 720 WGN. And so, in completely 180-degree turn from that, we are welcome, Timmy, our old friend Timmy from Iowa at the chicken plant in Iowa.
He's back.
Welcome, Timmy. How's it going, Timmy?
Hello, my name is Timmy.
Okay, well, thank you, Timmy.
It's so nice that you were able to come in today.
That was really, really nice.
You didn't have to work today?
How'd you get off?
No, I've got one day off.
Well, one day really a year?
Good. Yes.
So how old are you, Timmy?
I'm 3 years old.
Okay. Well, it's a pity they don't let you go to school in Iowa when you're three.
Yeah.
Timmy, let me ask you a question, all right? Do you kill chickens for a living?
Yes.
Do you pluck their feathers?
Yes.
Would you rather be in school?
Yes.
Okay. How many fingers do you have left?
Nine.
That's, I mean, nine, I mean, that's nine not, out of ten ain't bad.
Yeah, that's 90%.
I've seen worse.
Right? So what are you thankful for, Timmy?
I'm thankful that I got one day off.
We're thankful, too, because we're really happy to see you.
I know. I didn't think we were ever going to see Timmy again.
I got to be blunt with you, Timmy. I thought that you would be long gone by now, a victim of, you know, a workplace accident or something like that. But it's really good to see you still standing, even though you have one leg or two legs.
One.
Okay. That's what I thought.
So. Lost another one.
Yeah, right? That's it. Yeah.
One digit, one leg.
All right.
Yeah, it's a pity, you know, that the state of Iowa keeps rolling back these child labor laws and, you know, putting, you know, great kids like our poor little Timmy here in chicken factories and slaughterhouses instead
losing
of keeping them in
education.
School.
Yeah, Timmy, what's 2 + 2?
One.
Oh, man, close. It was close.
Yeah, that's what the chickens teach them.
Yeah, are the chickens teaching you math, Timmy?
Yes.
They're trying. That's got to be tough because I don't think chickens are very good at math.
Do you speak chicken? Okay, there
you
go.
Not happening. All right, so he's learning something.
Hold on. Well, there we go. Yeah, you know what? Actually, sounded pretty good.
I mean, he wasn't faking.
No. Listen, but hey, this is what we're talking about, right? That the country's sick of Timmies, right? We don't want to see kids working in factories. We don't. I mean, I don't care what you say.
Other than Timmy.
We don't.
Yeah, we joke around a little bit, yeah. Maybe more than a little bit here, but yeah. But this is something that's seriously happening.
And the only people that want to see kids working in factories are the people that own the factories.
Yeah.
Right? So come on. Like, let's maybe we never see Timmy again, you know.
I hope we see Timmy again.
I hope so too. I hope so. Timmy, thank you so much for
coming. Hey Timmy, what is your what do you wish for Christmas?
To get my other leg back.
Okay. It's worth, you know, Santa Claus could probably pull it off if anybody
that's
can.
That's a pretty good wish. Yeah. Like a prosthetic leg or like one of those Olympic ones with the metal thing.
Yeah, like yes. The Blade Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not like him, but it. Someone else. Yeah.
Not oh, quite yeah. like Oscar Pistorius. Yeah. Just the legs, not the rest of it.
I like how you know the guy's name.
I read the news.
All right, listen, we got to roll. We will be back. Thank you so much, Timmy, for coming in. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
How are you getting back to Iowa? You going to hop?
Walking on my one leg.
You going to hop?
Yeah.
That's going to be a lengthy, lengthy trip.
You'll be lucky if he makes it back in time for work tomorrow.
Well, you better hurry up. Clock's ticking. All right, listen, we'll be back next week with more of The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Workers' Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers' Mic, visit WGNRadio.com.